What do you think it means to be a person?
I don't know.
Me either, really.
Go.
Say scratch that again.
Scratch that a fan.
I'm Caitlin Metz, a non-binary illustrator and designer.
I'm Rebecca Tossig, a disabled storyteller and writer.
And this is Scratch That, Parenting and Reparenting Off Script.
A podcast for people trying to parent and person at the same time.
Head over to our Patreon, Scratch That Podcast, for show notes and a transcript of today's episode. And also to join the conversation.
Thank you for being here.
Hi, friends. Happy Monday.
Happy Monday. Happy Monday.
Oh, my God. We are here with one of my idol. This is like a fanboy moment for me, which I'm usually ashamed of being a fanboy. But in this instance, like, I don't care. I have no chill. Kate Bingham-Burt, illustrator, educator, parent, owner of the coolest Rizzo print shop. Just an incredible human and one of the people that was fundamental to giving me permission, not that you had any idea you were giving me permission, but that giving me permission to become a parent and to be an artist. So I want to jump in there and I just want to go straight into the parenting shit.
Oh my gosh. Yes.
So you were well established in your art career, in your education academic journey when you became a parent. And so I just want to hear about that. I don't know your story of coming into parenting, how that impacted your sense of self, identity, whatever comes to mind. Like, tell us about that, especially in relationship to the intersection of like being a creative person in the world.
Well, first, thanks for that intro. That was so sweet. And I'm very, very, very happy to be here. I spent the majority, I would say almost the entirety of my 30s doing the whole like, am I going to have a kid? Do I want to have a kid? Can I have a kid? Like, it was that whole dance. And I even had the talk with my mom when I was 38, where I was like, you know what? We're not going to have kids. Like, and she was super cool, super supportive. And then it was like, I had a couple years where I was just like, oh, whatever happens, happens sort of thing. And I found out I was pregnant in December of 2017.
Oh my God.
I know. I think that I had also just kind of released the stress of, is this going to happen? Do I have to do this? Like, so I was 40 when I found out that I was pregnant. And fortunately, I had really good models of how to raise a kid in a creative space because my mom and dad, when I was growing up, they were weavers. And so I very much grew up in their studio. I very much grew up going to art shows with them. I very much grew up, I mean, I would wind skeins of yarn for 5 cents a skein when I was probably six or seven. And I would just watch the nickels accumulate as I sat there and just like wound yarn. And they didn't have an outside studio for a while. And so our living room had 3 6-foot Cranbrook looms set up in it. Like the smell of yarn is like, I can conjure that very, very easily. And it was like I was just part of the family business. So like that entire, basically the entirety of me growing up, that's how I saw them make a living, was with the things that they made from their own hands. And it also was very, speaking of permission giving, it was incredibly permission giving because I remember when I was like 10, I was like, I want to start my own business. And so I made my own pin business based off of like images that I would cut out of catalogs, because this was like the late 80s, early 90s. So catalogs were king, basically. And then mom like helped me figure out, like, we would go to the art supply store and we'd find the right kind of foam core to like mount the magazines on. And then I decided I wanted to be really fancy. I was like, I want to have the edges look like they're golden. And so we found the right kind of paint pens. And then I'm like, well, how am I going to display this? And so it was very much where I, what I also loved about how my mom like handled things too. It wasn't, she didn't push me to do this. She just kind of like presented options and followed my lead and like didn't make me feel like I was like silly or weird for wanting to do this. And then it was on my own accord. We had a very small town. There was two flower shops in this little tiny town of Missouri where I grew up. And I went to both of the flower shops. It was Fannin's Florist and Flower Basket. And I asked if I could consign my pins. And so those were my first two like accounts, basically. It was ridiculous, but it was so great. And I felt, and then I saw people who like weren't my mom and weren't my mom's friends that would buy them. And I was like, whoa. And so like, and also just like the excitement and like just sense of just pride that you feel when someone appreciates something that you've made with your own hands that you don't know. And you're like, they like it and they don't even know me. So they're not just being nice to me. Anyway, it's kind of magical. So I had my mom and dad as models for that. My grandma and grandpa, they were illustrators in the 40s, 50s, 60s, and 70s. My grandma was a children's book illustrator. And she like, I feel like her work ethic is one that I've tried to align my work ethic with because she also had four kids, not one kid. She had four kids. And she was also, from the more that I learned about this, was the singular stable kind of income of the family. My grandfather was a very creative person, but he was a little bit more like up and down, a little bit more kind of like bravado and grandiose and like all. But my grandma was like the steady person who was always working. She always loved it too. It wasn't like one of those things where, and it was very much from just like whenever I get frustrated with a job, I'm like, my grandma would be like, it's just drawing. Drawing's great, you know? And she's like, it's like a real privilege to be able to get paid to make something with your hands. Her work was play and her play was work. And she also kept nighttime hours. So like, the majority of her work got done like after everyone went to bed. So she was really able to jam a bunch of stuff out between the hours of 9 and 1, 9 and 2. And she had a studio in the basement of their house that I absolutely loved going to and hanging out with her. And she drew until she no longer could draw into her mid-70s when she got macular degeneration and she just lost all of her kind of like detail sight. But she had been doing that since the time she was 19 years old, when she got her first children's book commission, when she was in art school in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. I feel very fortunate to have had two really good models of family and art and creativity and how those all blend together too, for sure.
So you have like this epic legacy of creative living and these models. How does that play out with Hank? Like, is he a creative person? Like, what does it feel like to do this work with him? Is he just a part of things with you? Or
so Hank, I feel like it's one of those things where I'm like, it's all around him. It's going to resonate in a different way. But he is not a kid who like goes to like, he doesn't enjoy coloring. He doesn't really enjoy drawing that much. He likes Rubik's Cubes. He likes Legos. He likes, you know, he likes to organize things by color. He likes patterns. He likes systems. He likes to print on the Riso because he likes to see like the numbers count down. We had an experience over Christmas during one of the holiday shows last year where he was watching me and my business partner Leland table at these different events. And then he saw a couple kids selling things and he was like, I can do that. I can totally do that. And I said, well, do you want to make some cards? He was like, yeah, let's do it. And so like he essentially made bootleg like Minecraft cards, holiday cards, Another like video game character called Among Us, which he's never played, mind you. It's just like he's drawing these things. And then I separated them out on the Riso. Then he picked the colors. And then we printed and we made a like a whole card series. And he was going to have a little section with another one of his kid friends at this market that we did called Mall Rats. And it's supposed to be all day. He ended up only doing it for like 2 hours and he made $200. He was counting his money and he's like, I think I can be done now. And I'm like, well, I mean, you what? This is, he's like, no, I think I can be done now. But he loves telling people how much money he made that day, which I'm like, we don't need to just open conversations with this.
It's pretty impressive. But I love a few things that you said, like he's around this world. He's living in a planet of creativity. And also like it's going to mean something different to him. Like I think about that a lot in our family, like our high, high values, both me and my partner, Micah, of creativity and wanting to instill that in you. And then, but also wanting to follow your lead. And if this isn't your jam, like, you know, like, but being curious about what that might look like. I'm a writer, not an illustrator, but my kid is obsessed with drawing. Like my kid draws all the time. And that's not my thing, but I'm witnessing it with wonder. But it's just how our kids can be different than us and how our values might take different shapes or not be as important, or there something else is really important to them that's not important to us. I like seeing that in you and Hank, and especially with this legacy behind you of this history. And this is, you know,
he's so not into it, but it's like if he ever, we have tons of art supplies, it's all accessible, it's everywhere. So if he wants to dip into it, it's very easy for him to dip into it. So
with Charlie, it was really hard for me, especially watching Otto be so into art has been hard for me.
It's hard. It's hard, Caitlin.
I wanted that for Charlie.
Yes.
But I am watching him. He wants to like build like traps and intricate like structures out of yarn. And I did the thing where we were like, everything is a possibility. Everything is like a medium for you to use. Too hard. And he will have full on meltdowns if he sees us throw out any type of like box, tube, whatever. And so like tape and string, like three dimensional things, which is not the way that I create stuff. But there's this like opportunity to like pause and see your kid embodying your quality, like the things that are important to you. Like it's important to me that when we look at an object, we see multiple uses and possibility. And also it is infuriating that I can never get rid of trash.
Oh, there was a while where Hank would not let me throw away any sort of toilet paper tube, paper towel tube, anything like that, because it could be turned into a marble run. And what are you doing?
Yes. Why would you waste like this?
Why would you get rid of this? This is a perfectly good marble run. But it would just sit there and it would just pop. And I'm just like, I'm living in a garbage can. Because it's one thing if you're actually using it and it was just like, no, we need to keep it. No, it's Charlie sounds very similar, like with like the building and the systems. And but it was, I was just like, oh, I can't wait for, like, Hank and I can draw together. We get, no. He turned 7 on the 11th and I turned 48 on the 12th. So we're coming out of like the birthday fog. And we had our last birthday gathering last night with my mom and my sister. And then just it was more family stuff. And he was, yes, he explained that he was tired, but he was not a very grateful child in regards to the presents that he was getting. And so I was trying to figure out like, okay, again, just like how do we instill gratitude into our children? And I told him, I said, you know what, we can sit down. I said, because I need to do more of this too. I said, we could sit down at the table. I said, we could just have a designated time every week where we sit there and we make drawings and write letters to people that have done nice things for us during the week. And he was just like, no, I do not want to do that. And I'm like, we're going to do that. And so that's going to be a new ritual where we both are going to be doing this together and we'll see how it goes. But it's, again, it's just the writing, the reflecting, the like trying to like, again, model gratitude.
That one is so hard. It's so hard. I'm not even sure how I found you, but I think I found you through your TED Talk. That's like a million years old.
2013, baby.
Oh my God. I have showed it in so many classes, sent it to so many like coaching clients as homework to watch. The way that you speak about ritual and constraint and creating systems and order or rules in a way that does not feel punitive. It feels expansive. While like holding yourself accountable, it doesn't feel like a punishment. It feels like an invitation. And so I love that you brought up that this is like a ritual that you're creating for you and Hank. So how does this system of like creating rules and rituals and like limitation or restriction as the opportunity for expansiveness play out in parenting for you?
I feel like when kiddos don't have a system, don't have a schedule, it's really difficult because I think at least for like my child, it's like, then everything starts to fall apart. I mean, Hank is very much like, what are we doing today? What's happening today? Like what's, and then so it's, and I am like that too. If I don't have the structures set up to where I can actually carve out time to be making things, I don't feel great. I really don't feel great. And so I know that I'm like this. I've never been one to just like, I'm going to go wander off and just like paint to paint. Like I need to have us. And I think this is also where I still very much act like a designer, like a business person, where I'm very goal focused. I'm very I have to know why I'm doing a thing.
You give yourself very specific assignments. Like for people who don't already know, like the illustrating all of your credit card debt receipts until the credit card's paid off. Or like one of my favorite ones I read about that you did is like taking pictures at thrift stores or garage sales every Thursday or whatever it was.
Oh yeah, that photo project especially was where I found myself. This was my first year of grad school so this was like, oh my God, like 2001. I had just come off of working a couple years full time as a designer for a gift company in Omaha, Nebraska. And I was doing all, you know, their marketing materials, all their catalog stuff. Like I was like very busy. I was also their sales associate. And then I started graduate school. And I think this is, and I tell this to all my students that go to graduate school too, where it's like your first year, you don't know what the hell you're doing. And I feel like that's by design, and which is great. But my like deadline brain, my schedule brain, my like performance outcome brain was not handling that well, because I was talking to these like art professors that were like very much not project managers. And so I was like, well, I'm going to have to. And I think that was a really powerful thing for me, because I'm like, well, I'm going to have to figure this stuff out for myself. Like, I'm going to have to create these assignments. I'm going to have to create these rules. And it also wasn't about having like finished pieces. And I think that's important too, where it's like, how do you create a structure where you can just dive into the process and start making piles and not put pressure on yourself to like, I'm doing this because I'm going to have this amazing photo show. Like when you brought up, Rebecca, I was doing this because that was also a very particular time where everyone was doing the transition from film photography to digital. And so I very much like the assignments that I would give myself at that stage of the game or with my film camera, because that's the only way that I knew how to shoot essentially. But I wanted to not treat the photo as such a precious object. God, I spent a lot of money on film processing at that point. Like I kind of wish that I had my digital camera, because it was such a process-based project where I would, you know, every Tuesday, Thursday, I go to thrift stores from, you know, X amount of time. I think it was like from 10 to noon because that fit into my schedule. And I would just take photos. And there wasn't supposed to be a goal or an outcome. And then I'd process those photos. And then I'd take them and see what patterns were emerging, what I was seeing. And then on the Saturdays, I would go to a Target or I'd go to a Kmart or a Walmart or some other big box store. I was also recording audio of customers. I was asking them questions about what they were purchasing. I took pictures of the objects in their cart. I took pictures of them in their cart. I had like model release forms. Like I even had to create structure for myself so it felt legit. And the Target was great. Their only thing was like, we just ask that you don't call them customers because they are our guests. Like, okay. as long as you let this 26-year-old art student do whatever they want to do, I'm down. You know, it was just so funny. I was like, okay. But I mean, that's also where I kind of learned what that, like that kind of structure, like that type of looking and exploring and not putting pressure on yourself, but yet you are giving yourselves kind of these quotas for making, those lead to actual ideas that you can execute. And that's, that kind of kicked everything off for me, honestly.
So do you see that impulse in yourself, that driving, that shape showing up in how you interact with Hank? Like you mentioned the gratitude, like is that something that shows up in your parenting or does that feel sort of like a separate thing?
Oh, it's so hard. Cause then it's like, cause I don't feel like I know what the hell I'm doing. Oh God. You know how we always feel like we're doing some damage to our children. I feel like I hate being late. Like I always kind of have like routine schedule things. And I've like sensed him kind of adapting those. And I'm worried that it's going to manifest as like crazy anxiety because I'm also very much where it's like excitement and anxiety are very close to each other. And I feel like I've always very much like been a very excitable person. And I feel like that's a way that I've managed just my anxiety, basically. And I feel like I've always been another way that I like manage my nervousness is to make sure that, you know, everything, I've got everything really prepared. Everything's really like, you know, whenever I'm like getting ready for a workshop or whenever I'm getting ready for school, I very much have the mantra where it's like, focus on the things you have control over. And I, all those things I have control over, that syllabus will be super tight. I will have that first day, like, everyone's got like a table setting of like fun things to do. I know how to like get a room feeling real good because I have control over those things. But also that's me giving me more of a sense of control over how that first day experience is going to go because I'm nervous. And so I'm like, we're going to start on time. I've got like, and I tell this to my students all the time too, when they're spinning out, I'm just like, hey, you don't have control over X, Y, and Z, but you do have control over A, B, C. Like, let's take that nervous energy and focus it on the things that we do have control over. And I don't know how this is going to manifest in Hank, but I do see him as like, oh, no, we're going to be late. We're going to be late. We're going to be late. We need to like, oh, I can't go in there. And he has to be first to a play date. He has to like, and so I'm just like, oh, no, this is me. This is me, to the point where it's like, if he is running late, he doesn't want to do it because he's not going to be first.
Well, but Kate, also, this is the impossible setup of parenting, which is that we will never know. Like, was this always going to be Hank? Or maybe like you're giving him the exact tools that he needs to manage something that was already in him. Or, you know, like maybe we'll hear in 15 years what he thinks, but we will never know, you know? And that's frustrating because we've got our own set of things like that at our house where I'm like, that I see myself and my, all of the things I don't wish for Otto manifesting in Otto. And I'm like, how do I stop the train? I don't know.
I know. And then I don't know how much I'm projecting. I don't know how much, like, it's just, it's like all those things.
Yes.
I'm just like,
yes,
oh, dear
yes,
Lord.
Yes.
Dear Lord. But to answer your question in a very short way, I feel like I probably could be a little bit more structured and scheduled with him because I feel like he needs a little bit more guardrails. Or maybe not. I have no idea. Golly, we're just doing the best we can.
We're all just doing the best we can.
One day at a time, baby.
I wanted to just like call back in the way that you're speaking about creating the restraints for the project, but not a specific outcome. And I just wanted to like underline that as being so, and it being kind of like what you can control. You can control how you show up each day, but you can't control the end result. And then thinking of it as a creator, to think about the process and how I am like showing up to the work versus trying to like form what's the final piece before I even know the path to get there. But it also feels like something about parenting too, because like we all want to like raise a well-adjusted, kind, wholesome like adult. And but like that final outcome is so impacted by so many other things. And if we're just like grasping to that, so it can just be about what is the process of showing up each day and how does that, and thinking of it as a practice, as something that like is always evolving.
That is the thing we have control over, is trying to show up, trying to show up. Again, we don't have control over the outcome. And this even goes in an, like parenting, but like, it's also like I talk with my students, the climate of jobs, and the economy, so uncertain. I've taught the senior portfolio class since 2011, a couple times every year. And wow, the way that I taught it in 2011 is so different than the way I teach it in 2025. And the core shift in the things that I feel like that I teach with my students at Portland State is so much more focused on showing up for yourself, showing up for your community, being an active, engaged participant in your own life, paying attention to the people around you. Like, again, it's just like that is the stuff that you have control over. You don't have control over, like, if you're going to get that job, like, please, please, please do not devote your life to a company that's just going to lay you off in like 6 months to a year. Like, it's like also really focusing on the things that, like, developing your own personal voice, developing the things, knowing the things that you want to make. Because I have so many conversations with students, former students, that maybe they've been working for a company for the last, you know, several years, and then they get laid off, and then they come back to me and they're like, I don't even know what it is that I like anymore. I don't know what it is that I like to make. I don't know what it is that I like to do. I'm really, really, really lost. And I just, it's, and I'm like, we're just going to start again. Let's like figure out like what lights you up. What is it that you want to be making? You know, but it's like you lose your sense of self in that. And yeah, there's multiple things going on with that rant that I just went on. But it's like it's hard. But I do think the things we have control over is how we show up every day, you know? And sometimes we show up not great. And sometimes we show up like a badass. And so it's but as long as you're showing up.
Yeah. Well, and also like untethering, I think when it comes to both the product of art or creativity and parenting in our kids, the end result is rarely immediate. Like,
oh, so messy. So messy. My mom's always telling me, she's like, it's really good that you had that discussion with Hank about whatever thing that I'm like worried about or like wanted him to like, and I'm like, well, I don't really feel like he was paying any attention whatsoever. And she's like, he's paying attention. Yeah, he's paying attention. He's paying attention. And she even like told me that again this morning. She's like, he's paying attention. He might not look like he's paying attention, but he's paying attention. And again, it's cumulative. Like you keep kind of like showing up, practicing repetition, and it's gonna hopefully stick. And that's why we're writing thank you notes.
Yes, you are. Yes.
It's 15 years. It's going to be great. Can't wait. I'm going to be so old.
Well, it's hard to see the threads. I've been thinking about this in my work. I'm preparing for the self-portrait workshop. And so I've been looking back. I have like 20 years of taking self-portraits. And I know what it meant at the time, but looking back, I'm like, it's a whole other thing. And it's making me so excited for the work I'm making now, because I'm like, I don't know yet what these threads are. I can look back and see stuff. And at that, like when I look at Charlie sometimes, I'm just starting to get glimpses of things where I've really fucked it up and shit that I've really done well. And from that, I can kind of like course correct, but I'm not going to know over the next 5 years necessarily what was good and what was bad, because it doesn't always seem the same way. You don't know until you look back, but you have to keep just like every day showing up instead of grasping at the end goal, just being like every day I'm like trying to move in this direction.
And I want to say big shout out for just like making time and space for looking back too. And I feel like that's kind of what's a brilliant thing of like, again, if you have to prepare a workshop, if you have to like give yourself that, you only, at least for me, the only way that I can kind of connect those dots and move forward is by forcing myself to look back. Because you, when you're in it, you don't see it. And just like Caitlin, you've got like this 20-year archive of self-portraits where like when you were doing that when you were a teenager, I'm sure you didn't think about like what this would be like 20 years from now. But boy, aren't you glad that you have that? And don't you have like to have that window? And it's just, it's like the addictive nature of just like documentation too. And just like thanking the teen self, the 20 something self for just like doing it because you were like, I have to. And
yes, that is the thing. And I think as I get older, or as I like, lately I've been coming up against this thing where I like need to be an adult. Like the closer I get to 40, the more I'm like, huh. And I, looking back has been so useful because I'm like, there was no plan. There was no goal. It was like this guttural, visceral, like I must do this thing. And now I have that documentation and what it means and what it's built on, which is really helping me now as a like panicked, almost 37-year-old baby. If I have an impulse to do a thing, I need to do a thing, and I don't need to know why it's important.
Yes. And I think that's the voice that we must continue to keep listening to. And that's the thing that I'm, again, not to invoke my students again, but I'm like, if it's something that you're like, this is like, I have to do this, don't question it. Don't question it. And also be happy that you have something that you're like, I have to do this.
And don't feel like you have to make sense of it yet. I think that too is like, I am like, oh, well, I need to like understand it and be able to speak to it. And it's like, no, also that's none of my business right now either. Like speaking to my work and making the work are two separate things.
Two separate things. You think through making. And that's another thing. Like, that's the way that I think. It's like through the moving of the hands, through the making of the objects. That even goes back to the Sister Carita rule. That is like, again, they're two separate things. And that's like, that is such a huge permission giver for me. Where I'm like, they are two separate things. Like, holy cow. You can't analyze and create at the same time. There's no way. And in fact, when you do analyze and create at the same time, then you stop creating because you've overthought, because you've talked yourself out of the thing, because your brain is like, oh, why would you do that? That's so silly. That's so ridiculous. What a time race. Like you can't do those two things at the same time. Absolutely not. So thank you, Carita Kent.
Interrupting this episode to say thank you to everyone supporting the podcast on Patreon.
We love seeing your comments come through. We love getting to know each of you better. Like, you being there really means the world to us.
If you want to support the project financially, you can become a paying patron for as low as $5 a month. That's less than a latte.
But there's lots of free ways to support the podcast too. Sharing episodes, giving us one of those very pretty 5-star reviews, all of that makes a huge difference too.
And you can also join Patreon without paying. So the show notes will always be there for you. Okay, back to the show.
One thing that I have really wanted to ask you about, as I have witnessed from afar all of these different roles that you are toggling all the time, parenting, teaching, that alone, but also doing client work, also like maintaining your own sense of self as an artist. I'm curious about how these roles inform each other, how they maybe speak into or give to each other in different ways. What is that like?
I always think of it's like you can do lots of different things, but if those different things are actively working against each other, that's probably not great. Like you need to kind of...
And exhausting.
Yeah, exhausting. You're working against each other. Because now I'm starting year 17 at Portland State. And one of the things that I do quite a bit is help junior faculty figure out how do you not lose your mind being a full-time teacher, keep these research agendas that you're supposed to have, and how do you balance all of that? So, and so much of it, I feel like we're so inclined is to do things that kind of like work against each other. And you need, and this is where I feel like you need to have good mentors who are very familiar with what it is that you're doing, because they can see things that you can't see. Like I will be working with faculty where I see them doing things that they don't consider part of their like academic agenda. And like, you're doing this stuff all the time. Like, for example, I have a very, very wonderful colleague who is like, he runs a podcast. He runs our, like our lecture series. He was doing all these things because he just loved doing them, but he never considered it as part of like something that he does. He felt he had to do this other thing, or like we add these like unnecessary like assignments and pressures and rules to ourselves. Or I'm like, rock the thing that you're doing, that you're naturally doing, and just lean the F into it. And that's going to like, that's going to be so rewarding. Again, it's like, I'm looking for places where there's like not friction, where it's like, you want to be using the momentum of the other projects that you're doing, so they play into each other. And that's, and I feel like that's only been something because I've had to do this for myself for so many years. And now it's like when I'm like on hiring committees and like working with like new faculty, like identifying like, okay, what about this? What about this? This feels like this would work. Like, let's try it out. Let's see how it goes. You know, it's like, cause it's just, you want to look for those points where you, because again, just Caitlin, as you like, you're like exhaustion, cause that's where burnout comes from. And that's where it's like, you just feel like you're fighting yourself and you end up resenting this thing that you thought you initially really loved. And my goal for trying to maintain like a happy, healthy crew of faculty is to, I just point out, I'm like, oh, like, how you doing? This seems like it's being difficult. Or like, do you really need, like, let's take this away. You don't have to do this. You're making, and again, this is the conversation that I have with Hank all the time. You're making things harder for you than they need to be. And I think we sometimes gravitate to making things harder for ourselves than they need to be. And we try to push away those things that feel light and fun. And
because it feels not important. If you don't suffer, it's not real. If you're not suffering, it's not real.
Yes. And I'm like, why are we doing this? And again, I think this is not to bring Karita back into it, but it's like, she's got the it's lighter than you think. Enjoy it. It's lighter than you think. This is lighter than you think. Do I have to keep doing this? No, I don't. Can it be replaced with something that's actually more fun? That is going to like have a more of a, I hate to bring this in, but more of a return on investment. Yes. Yes, you can. It's lighter than you think.
And prioritizing those things that like inexplicably you're like, I have to do this thing. So I'm going to do it whether or not I'm doing other stuff. And it's like, can you cut the misery and follow that thing and trust that it's going to go? So I'm hearing the marriage of like theory, practice, and like personal desire, curiosity, like your innate, which has no rhyme or reason. So and that lives, that I think in the Venn diagram of like theory and practice is that thing. But you don't know what it is until it's like, oh my God, I needed this like clarity just in a very selfish way. Like, oh my God, I'm like, okay, Kate, I just need you to coach me. And that's how you're holding parenting, teaching, running your own studio outlet, your personal practice, your client work. And those can feel so disparate and also
they're mostly the same shit.
They're mostly the same.
Which I think that we make shit so hard for ourselves as parents, because it's like, we have to suffer, we have to control, we have to get them in every after school thing. Things have to be like kid or adult focused. And I'm like, these are just tiny humans. Like, we could just do the thing that feels right, trust that intuition, read, follow the people that are inspiring us. Like, yes, have that, hold on to that theory, but also be in the daily practice and just like follow what feels good for that tiny human and your family and your practice.
Very good. Very good. Very good.
So we have this playlist of songs that our listeners and our guests have added that are songs that have like held us, songs that bring us back to ourselves. Do you have a song recommendation you want to add to this Scratch That playlist?
Okay. I've got a real dorky one. So it's a Paul Simon song. It's called Renee and Georgette Magritte and Their Dog After the War. It's from the 1983 album Hearts and Bones that came out right before Graceland. So it really did not get a lot of love because Graceland like blew up. But it's the song that also that Hank and I listen to at bed every single night. And I like sang that to him when he was a little baby. And that's kind of his sleep song still, which is very cute.
Kate, where can people find you? Where can the listeners go and look for more of you?
You can go to katebenjaminburt.com, which is a website that I just updated for the first time in 8 years.
It looks good. We will all go check it out. We will also check it out. We'll be linked in the show notes.
Thank you for the pep talks. I'm going to just listen to this on repeat when I need some...
Thank you for giving me the space. Thank you for giving me the space. I really appreciate it. And keep up the good work, you too. You're awesome.
Thank you. That's how we feel about you. Bye, friends.
Bye. Thanks, everyone.
Bye.
You tell me when we're done, okay?
This podcast is edited and perfected by the most beautiful wizard and my favorite dude, Micah Jones.
For all the show notes and a transcript of today's episode, check out our Patreon, Scratch That Podcast. This is our hub. It's where you can join the conversation and be part of our community.
If today's episode resonated with you or made you think of someone, share it.
And if you want to support the pod and also make us glow inside, go give a 5-star review on Apple. That would be so lovely.
Thank you for being here, for listening, for being a part of this community.
We love you so much.